email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Dublin's eight-time All-Ireland football winner Michael Darren McCauley has taken up the role of chief executive with Sanctuary Runners, the not-for-profit sporting movement which focuses on community integration. And Michael Darren McCauley joins me now in studio. Good afternoon and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Ray.
Yeah. So, Sanctuary Runners, I know a lot about it. Our listeners may not. How long is it in existence?
So, Sanctuary Runners is in existence nearly 6 years now.
Right.
So, I suppose this is all the brainchild of Graeme Clifford, who I'm sure you've met, and kind of maybe got some of his infectious enthusiasm. It was his kind of, he had a passion for integration and community, and it started off as just a volunteer project. And I suppose the need for it, the want for it, it kind of grew, and now it's a fully fledged charity. There's 7-8 staff,
But what do they do?
Sorry, okay, so
no, I know, because I remember talking to Graeme first, and I couldn't get my head around it. So I was wondering, do you want money from us? What do you want to do?
So this is all about community integration. Yes. So this is about communities coming together and working together. So this is mainly directed towards asylum seekers and refugees from all around the country who have landed over here and are put into direct provisions and reception centres. And it's very hard for them if you land over here from Syria and you're thrown into an apartment and you're trying to get to know where the nearest creche is, to have friends, to have family, how to do things. It's tough to join the local junior hurling club to make friends that way. But I suppose running is one of those kind of real equalizers where everyone can do it. There's first and last, and everyone else is in the middle. And I think it's become a real nice, nearly overly simplistic way of coming together and bringing people together. Some of the magic happens while running. There's exercise and health benefits, which is huge, and a lot of people haven't done that. But I think the big part was afterwards. People are talking afterwards. There's always a cup of tea and a sambo afterwards, and I think that goes a long way. Yeah.
So people in direct provision centres and people, asylum seekers, they run, they wear the T-shirt that says Sanctuary Runners on the front. On the back of it, it says respect, friendship, solidarity.
Yeah.
And they're the big pillars of Sanctuary Runners.
That's the big pillars, yeah. But and I suppose this is for all sections of the community. So I suppose, and even from an impact study which was done recently, there was people who have been living in the communities for 20, 30 years, Irish people, and they were interviewed. And what an interesting finding from that was that it made them feel like more integrated into their own community. And so they felt like they were more part of this. They felt more welcoming and they felt more engaged in their own community. And from some of the studies that were done were from people who were seeking international protection, and some of the you can make stats look all the way you want, and I'd feed them whatever way you want them. But I think what was interesting was some of the feedback was, I feel like I have family here. I feel like I have a purpose. I have something to do. And I was reading through it, but I saw one that kind of really stood out with me. It was like a couple of words. It just said, I got my dignity back. Right. And it was just like, I think like that goes so far to be part of a group, to come over here. Like so many people here think they come from traumatic backgrounds. And look, I'm not taking anything away from that, but a lot of these people have seen things that we don't want to be seeing. And then come over here into a whole different set of circumstances, and it's tough, and it's just to bring those two communities together.
Now there's an annual thing which I've been at, and we've had a number of Sanctuary Runners on our Run with Ray thingamajigs. Is it a weekly thing in areas in place around the country?
Yeah, so you can go onto the sanctuaryrunners.ie, or you can go onto any of the social media, you'll find it. So there's a map there and you can see your local group. So there's 40 groups set up around the country. There's a couple more up and coming as well. And it's just a case of showing up. There's no membership fee. It's very low barrier to entry.
Yes.
And they're running, a lot of them are kind of linked in with the local park runs. Some of them are kind of running during the week as well. And people just show up, we'll get you a blue top, you look the part. And then once you'll notice that once you have the kind of blue top, you'll see, oh geez, there's the blue tops are everywhere. And they're kind of showing up all around the place. And we actually found was a nice little thing was that some people, is the nature of international protection, they were kind of moved on, and there were some people in Dublin, they got moved to Dundalk, and then they were just wearing the T-shirt going down the road and someone spotted them saying, oh geez, you're a Sanctuary Runner, we have a group around the corner, would you get involved? So the T-shirts has kind of become a real kind of symbol of it. But again, we all know feeling part of a team, feeling part of something is so important.
Yeah, and moving outside. And when I was on holidays down in Waterford, I met a group of Sanctuary swimmers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having the crack. And I met Anne-Marie from the organisation. She was saying that some of it was mainly women, I think there was one man, had never been in the sea before from where they came. They couldn't swim, but they were having a lovely evening. And then they had a barbecue because they had five sessions and this is their last session or whatever. So that's so you're expanding.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and how transformative is that? Is if you can get people swimming who've never done it before, it is a magic experience. So yeah, that kind of came around through conversations, and it's before my time. I'm only in the door a week, but with Swim Ireland, Sarah Keane, who's been very positive around the organisation and what we were doing. So yeah, we're having conversations. Look, there's a lot of people interested, and there's a lot of different areas you can kind of reach into in terms of how can we kind of, like, I suppose it's so divisive at the moment with everything that's going on. How can we bring communities together?
Yeah, so this organisation is hugely important. And the majority of people want to share those pillars, respect, friendship and solidarity for people who come to our country, don't they? And unfortunately, it's the minority who get most of the headlines.
Look, bad news sells. Yeah, look, I think you're after just saying it there. Look, I was aware of this in my last role as well. You can do a million good things and then one bad thing happens and then it's all over the papers.
What was your last role?
Sorry, my last role. I used to work in the northeast inner city and I was doing a lot of community integration and sports development around there. But look, we had issues on Talbot Street and it nearly set us back so far in terms of people just thinking it's a no-go area. And if I could sit there and tell you 100 good things that are happening in the area, but it was the bad news that they want to stick all over the papers. And we see that as well. I think, look, exactly as you said, I think people are inherently good, are inherently welcoming and want people to feel welcome in this country and realise what people have been through and what we've been through as a nation in terms of migrants. And
Sally Hayden's book, Sally Hayden, who's a brilliant journalist.
Four Times Round, yeah.
Yeah. Like that's, you know, so you realise then what these people have been through.
Yeah.
like living in a tent on the canal then is nearly paradise. I know that shouldn't be the case, but considering what they've been through, getting across the Mediterranean Sea and all of that, and it's a real eye-opener, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd recommend that book to anyone as well. But I think, like some people, I think, and people are getting business class over here to try and claim the dole. It is not an easy life over here. If you're seeking international protection, if after all the paperwork, you might get €38, I think it is at the moment, and for a week. And for those people on the canal, I live at the canal, I was walking down there one day and there was a random man screaming at people in tents saying, "Get the F out of our country." And I was like, when did Ireland become this? Like, when is that normalised? When is that okay?
You were A-time All-Ireland football winner, played for Dublin. I would imagine that some of the people who are telling these people to get the F out of the country support Dublin and maybe in Hill 16 of a Sunday during the summer.
Look,
I'm just wondering how do they, if they're probably not listening to Radio 1 now, but if they see somebody like you who they look up to as a sports person, tell them that what they're doing is wrong and they should stop doing it, would they listen?
Well, I think it's important for people to use their voice. I've always kind of been a big advocate of that for people, especially sports people who are given some responsibility as an athlete to use that to positive effect. We've seen other people who would be supported by the marginalised and working class communities, like bands like Kneecap at the moment, who are kind of very outspoken on this. I was talking to, he's a Dublin rapper, Mango, who would have a similar crowd. I remember he at his gig, he shouted a message about inclusion and how everyone's welcome here. And there was definitely people in that crowd that day that maybe didn't feel like that, but felt if someone in a position of authority spoke like that, that they'd buy into it. So look, I don't know. I would hope that Dublin supporters would back me on that. Yeah.
I saw you going to Kelly Harrington's gold medal fight. You were in feud outside. Yourself and McMenamin,
that was
it?
Kev, yeah. Kev Mack, yeah.
Yeah, and we spoke to Kev. He's a sports psychologist,
isn't he?
That's it, yeah. I was thinking about Rashida Adeleke, right? Tala, Dublin accent.
Yeah.
So close, fourth place in the relay and in the 400 metre sprint individual. And if she had won a medal, she would be draped in a tricolour. What a message that would be.
Yeah, and still is. We would have liked a medal, but it wasn't to be. But look, Rashida is one of many as well. And that's what we want. Do you know what I mean? And I think some of these people just don't get it. If they want to support our sports teams, they have to support people who have come over here, who weren't born and bred, but four grandparents who are from Ireland. They're not. Rashida's just an amazing example of that. But it's the same, like all our doctors, all our nurses, all our everything. Like, if you want to live your life just getting treated by generationally Irish people, you'd have a tough life. And that's what part of, I don't want to speak to John Murphy all the time about what John Murphy does. I'm actually okay with that. I'm actually interested in the other cultures which are coming into Ireland, which are bringing something special, language, foods, Yeah. Everything. So I think that's a big thing. Look, and look, Rashid is an amazing example of that. And like she's, I think we're a big fan of her in Sanctuary Runners as well.
Yeah, so she's international. Mm. How do we do it at a community level then? How do we prevent these flashpoints happening?
Yeah, look, think? Migration is not an easy topic. No, I suppose it's not going to be solved like here and now. I suppose from a Sanctuary Runners point of view, I suppose we are not looking at policy changes like per se. Like we are looking at that community integration part, that kind of like those kind of conversations which happen, and letting people be heard, letting people like, why are people like angry? Like I had people announce that I was getting involved in Sanctuary Runners and I was going to be working with in this space, like random people on Twitter, and I know it's a cesspit these days, but were like giving me abuse, being like, who do you think you are, blah blah blah. And I was like, what is this?
Do you
like,
respond to them?
No, I wouldn't get involved. Like, and you have to be very, you have to pick your battles, and Twitter isn't the place for me, to be honest with you. It's not what it is. And like, look, I was speaking, like just last night I was in a sauna and there was somebody who spoke up about too many foreigners being in the country, and I was just listening, and there's about 15 people wedged into the sauna, and I was like, I've actually heard this fella go off before, and I was like, geez, do I get involved here? Like, and I was on the other side of the sauna, and there's a Polish man next to him, and he was like, what do you mean there's too many people? And he's like, oh, I've been working here for 20 years and all I see now is foreign people at the bus stops. And here's me waiting for his point. But like, I was like, I bit my tongue this time, right? And I did. There was like 15 naked people in the sauna. I didn't really feel it was the time for a fight. And maybe I kind of went back into the car and I left the sauna. I couldn't deal with it, but I was like, geez, maybe I should have.
Wasn't that interesting though?
Yeah.
Do we all have to call it out?
But why does that man feel like that? And Gemma's response was to the Polish man who was just asking him, like, and your man, he was just going at all foreign people, not just this. He didn't actually know he was sitting beside a Polish person. But the man said, he's like, why? What is the problem? And he was like, you wouldn't understand. You don't have kids. And I was like, look, I don't need to go into like the intellectuals of this conversation, but like why does he feel like that? And there's a tough conversation. So you have to kind of pick and choose your battles sometimes. Mm. But I think these people need to be heard. And I think the biggest thing we can do is humanize people and bring people together to have conversations. So when they are together, when you are beside Rashida Adeleke, sorry, not to use her as an example, but when you're beside anyone who's come over here seeking international protection, it's like, oh, sorry, they're actually human as well. They actually like a spice bag or whatever sort of like, commonalities you have with that person. Yeah. Something that I've actually thought about before is that like Gogglebox does that really well, where you actually see people on their couch. Like the English one is great. There's two Muslim girls there and they're just taking the piss out of people on Love Island, exactly like we do when we're sitting on our couch. And I'm like, oh, they are actually just very similar to us. And like it kind of gets rid of that sense of fear, that sense of that like xenophobia of a...
Well, a lot of it is ignorance, you know, like racism, some of racism. The other thing is people competing for limited resources.
Yeah.
So if people in certain communities feel that, for example, certain members of their community don't have housing, for example, and then they see other people coming in and they're getting housed, then, you know, that creates friction.
Yeah, 100%. And look, and it is definitely more of an issue. Like, sorry, where I spent my last 6 years working was on Sheriff Street and Dermot Street. So it was, resources are more stretched, and it's also got a higher percentage of migrant population. So
I saw it firsthand,
like definitely. And like, and we were kind of like tasked directly, but we were like seeing what projects we could do to integrate people. Like, how can we just get people to have a conversation? How can you realize that just because she's from Nigeria or Syria or wherever it is, that she has similar interests, similar likes? And like, if someone comes over here from Syria and like wants to coach the football team or wants to play music or wants to contribute to communities, that like doesn't make the papers. No one really cares, unfortunately. Like, you won't see that splashed all over Twitter. No. So, and unfortunately, like there's a huge issue with misinformation as well in terms of where that comes from and where people get their news. And like, I've seen that time and time again where people are just reading something on Facebook, it becomes facts. We've seen this all too often now with places which have been identified and not identified for people seeking international protection. But it's a dangerous place. So I think we just again, messaging is so important, and just bringing these people together.
When you got that negative reaction on Twitter, did that embolden you? Did you think to yourself, I'm doing the right thing because I'm getting that reaction?
Well, look, I felt this job kind of felt like it came along at the right time. And so many people have like, well, we'll find out if it's true or not, but have said this job was made for you because it's just so many of these different balls that I've been interested in for over the years.
Yeah.
And then when I saw the comments, I nearly laughed because it was calling me a Land Rover driving W or something. I was like, this is such nonsense. I wish I had Land Rover, but I don't, unfortunately.
What was that reference, do you think?
So, like I don't know that am I making loads of money off this? This is like, anyone that knows me knows that is not the case. But I think it's... there's just a weird kind of, like, you have to drill for it unless you're kind of speaking up about these issues. But there's a weird avenue down there of people who are just very, very angry for all of those reasons that we've kind of gone into. So I didn't know whether to laugh or cry at some of these things. Yeah. Like, and it's just, I don't think it's the place anymore to have proper conversations.
Yeah. So GAA has been kind to you and you've been kind to it, I suppose, over the years. But basketball was your first sport, was it?
Basketball, yeah. From the age of three, you'd see me from a big basketball walk around
the place. Were you dreaming of the NBA?
I had Michael Jordan all over my walls. That was it. I was fully fledged here. That was what was happening to me. I just like the school I went to was a big basketball school. My brother played. It was like, that was the only show in town. Unfortunately, it turns out there's people who are a foot taller who can do what I do and are generally better at basketball.
What height are you?
So it didn't. I'm 6'3".
Well, yeah. You're taller than Steph Curry.
So he's 6'3".
Is he? Oh, I thought he was 6'2". He's 6'3".
And he looks like a baby out there as well. Unfortunately, he's the best shooter to ever play the game. So I can't. I won't be competing with Steph anytime soon. So that was a big part of my childhood. I was like, I had a basketball ring in my backyard, and neighbours had to pay me to go to bed.
It's loud.
That was the crack. Yeah. So it was. It's always been a big part. Still is. Yeah. Preseason starts tonight. Would you believe?
Right. Who do you follow?
So well, I'm playing. I play with Aina as my club.
But, yeah, but who do you follow in the NBA?
I just keep an eye on it. Yeah, right. I managed.
The final was great.
Yeah. In the Olympics?
Yeah.
I'll say it's amazing. Yeah. And like everyone was rooting for, not for, everyone wants USA to lose, because they couldn't care less, really. But
why did it mean so much to them? Because they're all zillionaires, aren't they?
They are zillionaires. They seem to want it, yeah. So I think they came back to, they lost like two world championships in the last couple of years. So people were saying, oh, they're not as good as, so they got all the big boys out for this one. I was over there. I would have loved to get a ticket, but they're phenomenal. To be fair,
You did get a ticket for the Kelly Harrington fight.
I did.
And you were working around Kelly's area for the last.
Yeah,
six years.
I'd be good friends with Kelly, so we know Kelly well. I actually only told her that there recently. I had a ticket for her final before I got a ticket for her first fight. So I wouldn't tell her that now. Just couldn't be jinxed.
Could have freaked her.
Kelly's like, we can use her as a role model. Obviously, she's amazing. But it was great to see that journey. Like it's a tough slog in between. Yeah. Even I've seen the whole thing in between the last couple Olympics.
And have you chatted to her about, you know, that her comments that time? Because they seem to be the polar opposite of what you stand for.
She was taken out of context as well. Right. It really was anyone that knows Kelly knows how inclusive she is.
She's a lovely human being.
She's the best. Yeah. So I think anyone that knows that, it was just a nonsense interview and she just wanted to kind of not talking, and it just didn't come across well. Right, I think she knows that, but everyone knows she's like, sure, she's the best of friends with everyone, and goes out of her way to be inclusive, not just to Dublin people, to people from here, there, and everywhere. So I think she has proven that people can prove it on by talking on Twitter, but she's actually proven in real life.
She's walked the walk as
someone who's inclusive. So
and on GAA, because there you can count them on sort of less than one hand. You know, the number of sort of non-Irish people who play at county level.
Yeah.
So do the GAA need to do something?
Yeah, I suppose you have to, hopefully, and we thought we kind of would have seen it earlier, that you would have seen people from different backgrounds who would kind of stay involved with the sport and encourage it. So, yeah, look, I suppose you have to, it's good that you can have role models who are like you as well. So I think that's a big thing. I didn't look exactly like Michael Jordan. He was still a big role model to me. But I think it is important, and it makes it more realistic if there's people in Ireland who look like you, and that becomes a thing now that you can be. I'm sure there's
that's why Rashida and
I was just about to say that there's little girls out there now who are saying like, I can be one of the Sophie Becker or one of the girls now, which is huge. And I think we're not seeing that, so that's going to take a while to come through. And I think we need to be really welcoming and really kind of aggressive as an organisation. Look, we still don't have like a member of the LGBTQ plus community ever to play the sport, which is mental.
Yeah, it is mental.
Like that's but that's obviously not true.
Yes.
But it's obviously.
But people are fearful to come out.
Yeah, but it's not like I've had friends who.
Well, they don't log.
Sorry, the men's game.
Yeah,
sorry. Sorry, the football.
Yeah.
So like we've had one in the hurling, Don Logue, who's been great and can only speak as much as he can speak. But yeah, so look, it really needs to be like, I'm involved in one of the committees on that, but I was like, it's the only reason I am is because it's still not a safe space.
But you can't force somebody to come out either. You know?
No, Jesus, not that, but it has to be like a welcoming place. So like that goes through everything. It goes through dressing rooms, it goes through that, like the GAA want people that you can, there's visibility there. Like,
Did you see that today? That story about he's the officer for demographics in the GAA. His name is, he has one of those great names. His name is Benny Hurl. See that? He's the chair of the GAA demographics committee.
Born for the GAA.
Nominative determinism. Michael, you can take that away, which that's where your name suggests the career choice you might take in later life. Anyway, but he has said that they're down the tracks, the GAA isn't in great shape. Because in Dublin, they have too many members, whereas down the country, and they cite a number of small clubs around the country who are finding it difficult to field teams. And even in the team, you have a few leave inserts and then men in their 30s and 40s and the middle bit have all gone to Canada or Australia.
I'm probably not the best to comment on it, but I like it definitely anecdotally from what I've seen as well. Like even on my own football team, like there's that kind of age group where I played for the last 20 summers. I'm really embarrassed to say that. But
What age are you?
I'm 38 today, actually.
Right, happy birthday. Jeez, you kept that a secret. Happy birthday. Yeah. It's a big week for you, isn't it?
Obviously, my cake's coming in now and all the candles.
If you told us.
And the barbershop quartet. But you've seen that, like, whereas where we would have stayed and, like, geez, the championship is the biggest thing ever. Now, you see young fellas now are kind of saying, actually, I will take a bit of travelling and I might take a leave the football.
Yes.
You even see that with Dublin, which was, like, unheard of. Like, county players now are saying, actually, no, I'm going to travel. Dublin's not the biggest thing in my life, which I can't argue against. You know what I mean? Like,
no, but you would have sang that tune, wouldn't you, yourself?
I sang it, but I don't know how much I walked the walk. Because I was there. I played consistently for 11 years with Dublin and gave up everything as much as I could.
Oh, did you? Right.
Yeah. So as much as I tried, like, I saw my friends, got Australia and back and everywhere else and back. So I was there. But I do tell young fellas who are playing, I was like, look, see the world as much as you can. Like, football will be there. It's going to be an issue. We see this with the Olympics now as well. Like, I saw, like, one of my friends, young fellas, was like, all he wants to be is a rock climber now. He's having to see it on the Olympics.
Yeah. So GAA is, because they're competing, aren't they?
Yeah,
with other sports.
So like, we need to be like, well, like, say, I'm not even speaking, like, I don't mind what sport the kid plays, and I'd prefer to play any sport, to be honest. But that, like I know there's definitely going to be a huge amount going to athletics and all these other sports. So the GAA needs to be on the game,
And what about just, this is a bugbear of mine over the years, so you pass through a little village and they have a GAA club with two pitches and a lovely big clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe, if they have a soccer club or whatever, they're a field out the way with no facilities, maybe changing in a porta cabin or whatever, or one of those ship containers. Mm. And I think as a country, probably with government leadership, that we need to maybe integrate our sports. Like that, we were talking about integration earlier on, but this integrating sports.
Yeah.
So that in any small town, there would be a sports centre.
Yeah, I think it is the way to do it. I know in like Finland and Scandinavia, like they just do things right. They just have forward planning, which we were never a fan of in this country. So that's going to be the way it's going to be honest.
For survival, for everybody.
Yeah, for urban planning where it's going. So again, conversations have to be there. There's that kind of sense of like, Billy from the GA can't talk to Mary from the soccer. And like, I remember when we did an exercise in my last job and we brought everyone together into Crow Park and we had like all the mental health, all the addiction centres, all the youth clubs and all the soccer clubs and all everyone together. And it was amazing, like, and there's that kind of thing of fighting for funding as well, and like, geez, don't tell them what we have, or blah, blah, blah. But when you had them all sitting at the same table, it was like, oh, geez, we have a spare hall there, you can use that on the Monday, and sure, the U Club might say, oh, geez, we have canoe in there, you can do the canoe, you know what I mean? And people are just having conversations together, again, like we're talking about with integration of diversity.
Yeah, but you see even the front page of the Irish Times today, that club out in Fox Rock, like the Dublin Diocese, has sold the land, a 999-year lease to the local GAA club. Now, up until this, the local rugby club and local primary schools were able to use the grounds. And okay, it's uncertain as to what's going to happen now that the GAA own it.
Yeah.
You know, it's whereas it should be a community thing, shouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I'm not taking the brunt.
No, I know. Just like, sorry, you're talking about Sanctuary Runners. I love being in Sanctuary Runners. After years running alone, I'm finally in a club with friends to run with every week. Lots of new pals from interesting places. It's a brilliant organisation. We need more positive stories like this. Welcome, MDMC. That's you. That's Niamh Fairview Park Run. And Michael Dara, the nicest guy ever and a super footballer. He should be running the country, says Agnes. Well, don't go into politics, please.
We have a liar there.
Is that inevitable as well? Do you think you'll end up in politics?
The conversation's come up a lot lately.
Has it, right?
To be honest, yeah.
No, because obviously elections next year and parties are going to be looking around for people.
It's going to be this year, isn't it?
Is it?
But
because we're in August now. Do you think it's going to be this year? Do you know something that you can approach?
No. I think I'm interested in social change. Yes. And I think in a democratic society, I think that's like where things happen. But it's not for me. I don't think
I don't think.
No, I don't. I'll put my cards on the table here, to be honest with you.
Right.
But stop calling. It's a tough game, yeah.
It is a tough game. But as you say, to implement change, you know, you have to be at the seats, you have to be sitting around the table, don't you, with the people who have power.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I'm maybe jealous of some of the groups there. Like, there's a cross party on Palestine, which I'd be really interested in. I'm actually meeting with the health committee next week over. I'm very involved in lung fibrosis as well, some of those things really interest me. So,
How is your sister Margaret?
Oh, sorry, thanks. She's in well. I'm sure she's listening now. She's kids hanging out of her before they go back to school, so it's great.
Look, she got a lung transplant.
She got a double lung transplant. Yeah, yeah. And she even ran it. Well, walked a 10K there for the women's marathon. So it's. The power of transplant is something special. So I think just even to see where she was and is now is great.
Yeah, yeah, and just on that, because I saw you on the Late Late Show. So lung fibrosis runs in the family.
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a genetic hereditary thing.
Unfortunately, yeah, yeah. There's two types of it, but we have the genetic type.
Right. And you've decided not to get tested?
Just currently, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
So.
And what would be implications for you if you found out you had it? Although you've no symptoms, you're completely healthy.
At the moment, yeah, yeah. It's a conversation that has to be had soon, but I suppose there's no hiding from it either way if we do or don't have it. But I suppose it is a terminal illness eventually. But you have to have a lung transplant like my sister got is the best.
What age? Do you mind me asking what age Margaret is?
Margaret is. Oh, will I give her age?
She's older than you.
No, say she's like 43 or 44. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, if it's an issue for you, it will be.
Yeah, yeah. And she's one of the youngest people to have it now. So it normally creeps up a bit later. So it didn't creep. My dad didn't have it until he was 60 odd. It's not me being naive or being like putting my fingers in my ears saying blah blah blah. It's probably not relevant, like at this stage with how healthy I am. I'm happy enough not testing. Okay. So come at me in the future.
Right, a big week, birthday and new chief executive of Sanctuary Runners. And if you haven't heard about Sanctuary Runners or haven't been involved in your locality, there are 40 groups nationwide and it's well worth just doing a bit of research, put it into Google and get the T-shirt and maybe go out and join in. Respect, friendship and solidarity. Michael Darren McCauley, thanks so much and happy birthday.
Thank you, Gurmila.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.